This is Building Bridges. I'm Mimi Rosenberg with Ken Nash.
Now, part two of the homecoming tribute for the action figure, the instrumentalist of words, the writer, the master teacher, Amiri Baraka, featuring the eulogy of his son, Roz Baraka, the next mayor of Newark, New Jersey.
The homecoming tribute shut down a section of one of downtown Newark's main streets, dignitary style. African drummers flanked the entry to Newark Symphony Hall, greeting each attendee with ancestral rhythms and setting the tone for what would be a service filled with music, poetry, remembrance, and fire. The fire you light when a world-changing, shape-shifting native son has left us.
Inside, every seat was taken by those who came from around the corner and around the world for Amiri Baraka, beat poet, black nationalist, Marxist shaman, lighter of fires, a man whose intellectual and spiritual breath was reflected in his perpetual search for his truest place in the world and to free others to realize theirs.
Poet Saul Williams intoned, "This is a stick-up, Amiri, get out of the coffin." And with that, he conjured up Amiri Baraka's spirit and lifted ours, as did Woody King Jr. and Danny Glover, Asha Bandeli, Michael Eric Dyson, Jessica Kerr Moore, and Tony Medina, and Sonia Sanchez was there with an offering from Maya Angelou, and Sister Soldier was there, and Haki Mahdbulti, and Cornell West, and Larry Hamm, and Oliver Lake, and Kevin Maynard, and Avery Brooks, and Roz Baraka was there, the son, the chosen son, the next mayor of Newark, rhapsodizing, channeling the spirit of his father in an epic offering. Amiri announcing from the grave the power of a father to shape his son into a reflection of himself and into his own man.
I just want my family to stand up. On behalf of us all, we want to thank you for your love, your care, for taking care of my mother. Thank you for coming to show the world what my father meant to all of us. My daughters and my nieces, they're crying. If you ever find yourself somewhere lost, surrounded by enemies who won't let you speak your own language, who destroy your statues and instruments, who ban your boom ba boom, you in deep, deep trouble. Probably take you several hundred years to get out. We are the blues ourselves, our favorite color, the actual guineas, the original Jew, the first Caucasian. We are the blues, the past, the gone, the energy, the cold, the saw-teeth hotness, the smell above draining the wind through the trees. The blue leaves us black, the earth, the sun, the fire pushing becomes our hearts. Be-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo-dee-doo. They ugly on purpose. They murder to explain themselves. They believe everything is dead and everything alive is their enemy. Heathens think fascism is civilization. Be-doo-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-doo-dee. Arthur Blight says it in a tradition. Tradition of Douglas, of David Walker, of Garnett, of Turner, of Tubman, of Ragers, yeah, Ragers of kings and counts and dukes and Satchel Mouths and Sunrise, of Bessies and Billies and Sassies and mass musical screamingers of Brown's Well and Brown Sterling and Brown Clifford and H-Rap and H-Box, of black Baltimore sister blues anti-slavery singers, countless funky blind folks and one-leg country beboppers, tradition of Du Bois, Baby Dodds and Lovey Austin and Sojourner. I thought I heard Buddy Bolden say, "You're so terrible, you're awful, why do you want to be the president of all of this anyway?" Be doo dee 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 doo dee. Ba da 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 da. Ooh 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 ooh. Oh wow, A while, it must be the devil. Everything gonna be all right after you die. After you die, you're gonna live like rich folks. After you die, ba-da, 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 ba-da. Who owned the air? Who owned the water? Who owned the crib? Who rob and steal? Who cheat and murder and make lies the truth? Who call you uncouth? Walk through life beautiful more than anything. Stand up and walk through life. Love all things that make you strong. Be lovers. Be anything for all the people of the earth. You have brothers. You love each other. Change up. Change up and look at the world now, and it's ours. Take it slow. We have a long time, a long way to go. Don't be sorry. Walk on and out in the sunlight life and know we are on the go for love. We whalers. We are whalers. We get on a big whale and whale. Hey, whalers. Hey, whalers. Whale on. We should understand that history is changing right before us. And those that rewrite it are doing it in front of our very eyes. My father, he stood in the way of that, the attempt to revise history. He told our story the way it should be and needed to be told, with a mix of humor, fire, history, and a whole hell of a lot of music. It was the truth. He admired Du Bois a great deal and would talk about his idea of double consciousness or two-ness, that is, being African and American simultaneously, that duality of seeing yourself through the eyes of someone that despises you, to analyze that condition for us through his writing and his activity, and then to present to us a new self. He understood that we were African, that we arrived here on slave ships, and our existence was deeply rooted in Africa, but we were also undeniably American. His entire life tried to draw that picture for us, make us see the future of this country as inextricably tied to the fate of the condition of African-American people. He tried to cure America of this sickness, of national oppression, and later colonialism and imperialism and greed. His fight for America included the black nation, white workers, Chicanos, Native Americans. And on this day, as the press try and rewrite what is and what he was, we are all here today to see for ourselves, to tell our story once again. Just look at the complexity and the diversity of this gathering, of those that loved him, that called him brother, father, comrade, in every language you can imagine, in every dialect, and in every color on this planet is represented in this hall here today. Not just here to bid farewell, to say goodbye, or to mock and gaze. They're here because Imamu Amiri Baraka lived, because he affected us all, and we, because of his life, we will live. And after this day, the world will never be the same. We have lived too long off of the fumes of history. We have lingered in the past and romanticized even the worst of what was good. It says to us that it's time to start history again. To let our tears germinate the seeds of a new day, it's time to push back in a time where the most progressive elements of our society came together to elect an African-American president 2 times. He can't stop there. That was just a precursor of what must come. It also marks that they will and have become more intensely backward, and that the most vile and dangerous and right-wing elements of this country show their heads. They rewrite our history. They use Frederick Douglass's words to close public schools. They use Martin Luther King's words to deny us employment and opportunity, to make you oppose the very strategies that got us here in the first place. They use our children against us. They feed them violence and self-hatred and watch them murder each other on the street, then blame us for their deaths. They take a few of us and teach them privilege and give them degrees in exchange for their humanity and send them back to further dismantle all that is left in our community. And the opportunists and mercenaries that have turned our struggle into profit-making ventures, that have made good synonymous with money or luxury, because as my father would say, luxury was a way for them to be ignorant comfortably. To have more things and despise others for not being able to get the things. They are the anti-art. In fact, recently I was accused of being a poet, which makes me my father's son. I'm proud of my father. They tried to destroy his life and haven't rested even in his death. But we are here to surround him, to protect him, to love him, to speak in one collective kuumba, to shout, Nuestro hermano, nuestro padre, nuestro maestro, nuestro querido, the imamu, the living spirit, the pulsating in our struggle, the be of what is, the inevitable. He taught us to be artists in all of its forms, but focused us on content the most, to drive the point home, to be beautiful more than anything, that in and of itself was revolutionary in a backward time. That our ultimate job was to oppose what is ugly and spend his days trying to figure out what that ugly exactly was so he could oppose it fundamentally and exactly. He taught us, as Cabral did, that culture was a weapon. He was my father, our strength, our voice. We knew we would be okay. He was our confidence, our black on purpose. And when he spoke, you knew it would be said, what you were yearning, fighting, and thinking. He stood up all the time. He was a man full of self-determination. He defined for us the world and our place in it. He described our existence here, our trajectory, our being in this place. He was an artist and an organizer, a visionary and an intellectual, like Du Bois and Robeson and Douglas. He exposed this place with such mastery and rhythm alike. He was brilliant. And his movements through the world moved us all, pushed us. His sharpening of ideas corrected us all. And every mistake he made got us closer to the truth. He carried the history of ourselves in his words. He fought for humanity and all that was needed to make him human. He was our griot, our living and breathing conscience. He introduced the world to itself and finally made us all relatives. Our mother Africa in the millions of hues of languages and song that rest on every footstep of this planet. The world is ours, he would contend. It belonged to the people, not kings or corporations or individuals, but to all of us everywhere. They say he was privileged, but sacrifices privilege in a selfless society. But here, we are full of ourselves. Our moving forward predicated on how many others are left with nothing. Privilege is revisionism. I ran down a long Manhattan street, my siblings left in a car as my father and mother were beat by the New York Police Department. Or privilege like being busted over the head in Newark Rebellion by a schoolmate and chained to a wheelchair in the hospital, blood dripping down his face. Or privilege in refusing to grant him tenure when he authored more poems, essays, plays, musicals, fiction than most of the folks on the tenure committee combined. Or when they refused to publish his books and he had to go to Europe to get books published or put in print. Or when they took clothes off his kids' back and food from their mouths. Maybe he was privileged when they broke into our home and trashed everything without stealing anything. Hell, the only privilege in this is that you are not alone. The same kind of privilege Malcolm had or Garvey or King. The privilege to be counted among the best. They called him dangerous. Now that he was. His ideas challenged power. His words revealed intent and inspired people to wait, to move, to be counted. That was dangerous. The Spirit House, the Street Theater, Soul Sessions, Unity with the Young Lords in the North Ward, that could be called dangerous. The Gary Convention in 1972, African Liberation Day, Black and Puerto Rican Convention, now that sounds dangerous to me. The election of King Gibson, blues people was dangerous. Black Fire was dangerous. The Black Arts Movement was dangerous. So was him being the Poet Laureate, which is why he was the last one. Now that was dangerous. He stood face to face with the canon and introduced to literary academia real American stories of Langston Hughes, of Zora, of Melville, of Steinbeck, of Hemingway, of Twain, of Brown, of Morrison, of Sanchez, of Neal, of Angelou, that there was an American experience that was deeply driven by our struggle here, and we are all over it, that you could not talk about anything that was truly and significantly American without discussing us. Its classical music is jazz. Its culture and identity will forever be marked with our fingerprint. As Malcolm would say, America's problem has always been us. Or Du Bois said, how does it feel to be a problem? And that problem has shaped this country and will forever shape it. Yeah, he was dangerous because as long as he was around, they was never safe. They called him a polemicist, a polarizer, as if race and class didn't exist before him. and wail and wail that the only thing we have been number one in around the world is the gap between those that have everything and those that have nothing at all. That our history is littered with slavery, internment camps, murder, misogyny, and it was Baraka's voice, along with so many others, that gave us the courage to look at ourselves and actually see, then push us further and further toward democracy. They called him a racist. My father was no racist. You mean racists like Duke or Thurman, who made it to the higher echelons of American power, representing original terrorists that killed as language and negotiated with bombs? Yeah, he was angry with white America. He was angry because Emmett Till was beat to death and dropped in the Tallahatchie River. He was angry because Medgar Evers was murdered on his doorstep in the lap of his wife. He was angry because Goodman, Schwerner, and Cheney were killed trying to desegregate buses. He was angry because they orchestrated the death of Malcolm X, because Fred Hampton was killed while sleeping in his bed with his pregnant wife. He was angry because they deported Garvey and cursed Du Bois, because they brought a church wall down on the heads of four little black girls, because they taught us self-hatred and portrayed us as children or contemptible funny people, dangerously stupid or violently barbaric, because they shot us in our back and hung us from trees for at least a century. He was angry, and he had a right to be angry. They say he was an anti-Semite. He was about as anti-Semitic as the Rosenbergs. He was a Semite. To be an anti-Semite would mean he would have to be anti himself. Semite or half. Descendants of Northern Africa, Ethiopia, as in Sephardic, as in Phoenician, as in Armenian, as in Jewish. All of us are mixed, mestizo, as in Taino and Arawak, as in Blackfeet and Spanish and English and Angolan and Ghanaian, the mix of African, European, and Native. All of us are. The world is at that stage. We are all mixed. We are all Jewish, we are all African, we are all Christian, we are all Muslim, all of us, everywhere, whether you like it or not. Africa runs through our veins. It is the blood in our DNA. It's not our color or our food or religion or our location or our texture of our hair that divides us. It's our ideas, what we believe, and ultimately the side we choose to be on. You cannot be in the middle. All of that is subterfuge, a cloak, a tall tale, a ghost story that keeps us divided while trillions are spent on speculation and advertisement, and most of the world's children grow up in poverty and suffer curable diseases. My father's biggest problem was that he could never just be a mouthpiece. His life had meaning. No matter how much money they offered him, how many book deals, movie parts, intellectual accolades and positions, he just couldn't be anything else. His eyes were too big, his walk too rhythmic. He would always be himself, and all the critics, the detractors, like talking machines, could never really understand him. My father was a spiritual man. He couldn't escape it. He bore its name, Imamu, priest. He called Baldwin God's revolutionary mouth. He was God's muse, his song. You could hear it in his voice, his chants, his tapping on the podium, the noises he made, the expressions on his face as he did it. It was a religious act, an exorcism, resisting and confronting the devil. The language in his speak could not just be heard, it was felt. It was connected to that oldest language, that voice that called all things to rise up, that humming and intense vibration that turned into heat, then life, then music, then us. Imamu was clearly in the middle of that and tried to share it with all of us. I want to tell you about my father, a funny gentleman, a human being, really, that cared for the community's children, that made a safe place for them, that raised hundreds, that married people and gave them names, that loved his children and grandchildren, and introduced us and everyone around us to the world and its music. But if you ever came into this home, you saw books everywhere, the written word, art, and you heard Coltrane or Monk, definitely Ellington and Sun Ra, a few of the big bands like Basie or Bebop, like Charlie Parker, sometimes Mayfield or Marvin Gaye. My mother loved Billy, so she got played. Then Sarah Vaughan, Ella Fitzgerald, Miriam Makeba. I heard Nina Simone play the piano in my living room. Woke up to her one morning and sat and watched Max Roach in the basement of my home. There were parties that went on into the wee hours of the morning. There was always poetry read and great speeches given from dignitaries and artists from all over the world. That's why I never understood the moniker of racism they tried to lay on him. I heard artists from Latin America, Africa, the Caribbean, Europe, and activists alike. So I had no choice but to love art. My father was like that music, blues people, the music tracing our steps through history, our most tragic episodes and our proudest moments. The music told our story and our changes from slavery to freedom and every episode after. And just like the music changes based on mood, tempo, time, condition, so did our circumstance and so did my father. My father lived his life in the open. He stumbled through this place, and to stumble means to move forward faster. Faster than most of us, that is, as we worried about falling, took easy and careful steps. He was in the rhythm and out of it all at the same time. He took intellectual risk and usually landed square on his feet. All things are in constant motion, some slower than others, but moving nonetheless. My father moved, his ideas moved, and those that were around him and that could keep up with him moved too. The death of Malcolm sped things up a little, and the struggles around the world sped them up even faster. The press, the critics, his detractors try and fit him into one refrain, one stanza, but he was moving even today. They write about him and paint a small piece of him, the part they are comfortable with. But my father didn't write for critics. He didn't create because of or for them. He did it because it was a part of him. He was the music, as he says, the blues himself. Anyone that is the same person today that they were 20 years ago is someone that is not alive. My father is a revolutionary. And in that is the word evolve, or at least revolve. To turn, transform, transcend, to be transblusing. My father began to understand that we are all connected everywhere. That the families on Clinton Avenue had more in common with workers in Ireland and Haiti and Ghana and South America and Mexico and Egypt than they could ever imagine. He began to understand, like King did, that our enemy was poverty, disease, and the people that got rich off of it. He understood that we need to control our resources and use them for our benefit, that this by itself is dangerous. He wanted to control his own voice, wanted to speak in a way that he saw fit, not in a neat way laid out for him. He improvised, and when things got tougher, he improvised some more. More importantly, he told the truth, which disturbed some because they worshiped lies and liars and took turns reinventing lies. My father rose for a minute around Christmas Day, laughing and joking, but always clear, introducing me to the nurses and doctors, saying, "You know my son, he's running for mayor." He supported me, not just because I am his son, but because we are right. The people are pushing back against conservative, backward ideas. Millionaires that refuse to pay their fair share and elected ones that shut down government and refuse people Social Security and unemployment checks. People that hate unions and immigrants. The people are tired of bankers and hedge fund guys robbing their savings and foreclosing on their homes. They're pushing back against those that stand in the way of living wages and equal pay for equal work. They want domestic jobs and economic development plans, not billions for drones and more wars. People want courageous, democratic leadership, not bullies and demagogues. And that same group that united to elect President Obama is beginning to come together locally and elect local leadership and push for change in these cities all over America. This is the beginning of a progressive period. And we have to buttress it and exacerbate it with art and music and dance and essays and murals and fresh ideas. So I'm calling all cultural workers to get to work, to uplift, energize, and analyze, speak truth to power, excite these young people to embrace life and not to take their own, to build and control their neighborhoods and not destroy it, to read more and write more, to get them to see the world with themselves in it, the same way my father did for many of you. He taught us to understand that no matter what color tie you put on it, no matter how many letters are behind it, or the schools it went to, or how well you dress it up, or what language it speaks, a lie will always be a lie, and the people are tired of lies. They want to control their own schools and want to improve them themselves. They want to work to increase their wages. They want decent housing and to be able to feed their families. They want education for their children. They want their children alive and not in jail. They need creativity, not death marches. They want more democracy, not less. They're tired of dirty politics and dirty politicians. They want to see themselves in power and every motion used to push them further ahead. My father loved this city of ours. He was a Newarker to his core and made his final transition here in the South Ward in Beth Israel Hospital. He could have probably lived anywhere in the world, in Europe, in Africa, the West Indies, because he was loved and welcomed all over the planet. Because he chose to fight here, so do I. And hundreds of thousands of people like me. And even at the end of it all, he remained organizing and pushing that rock up the hill, determined to do so as Sisyphus. He pushed, still one big, long, heavy push until his last breath escaped him and his heart beat for the last time. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. It never goes out. It is at the origin of things, the thought that thought of itself and turned itself into itself. It is Malcolm. It is Malcolm's voice, 116th Street, final call in his left hand. It hides in the screams at the Audubon Ballroom, impregnating our children's minds with self-determination. You can smell it in the cinders of civil rights chants of 17-year-olds on the Edmund Pettus Bridge, dodging water hoses. It's that next time fire Baldwin shouted. At its core, you can hear it burning. You can hear it glowing. You can hear it growing like a whisper, a steady hum, a djembe drum beating against our conscience, waking our desire to be human, to be in tune with the world as it moves, burning individualism and greed. It will drive you sane. It is Pinero's cause and because. It is Albizu dancing bomba on the heads of his captors. It is a freedom dance. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. It never goes out. It is the answer to the question most asked. Why? And why again, said Imamu. It'll make you wise. We are an army of soldiers, of artists, armed only with our language and our history, vowing never to be slaves again, to be against poverty and dead children before their time. Have you ever seen black fire? It burns deep. You can try to extinguish it, but it never goes out. It never, ever goes out, only up or out as in broad, as in multiply, as in blues, black base of the fire, dancing, flickering at times, but never all the way gone. And it is Baraka's legacy. Black fire, hot beboppers, musical geniuses, magical words that burn holes all the way to freedom. Hey, Imamu! Imamu, black fire, where are you, Imamu? Black fire, Imamu, Imamu, where are you? Where are you, black fire? Imamu, where are you? Black fire, wailers, wailers, wail on!
Roz Baraka, next mayor of Newark. Part 2 of Building Bridges, Amir Baraka Homecoming Special.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.